leave by now, and she would never have the chance to say goodbye. "Did you get it?" he asked, watching her with careful eyes in the rearview mirror. She nodded, and the relief that flashed across his face was so stark it surprised her. Had he thought she wouldn't?
"The professor'll be pleased."
"Maybe," she told him.
"What do you mean?"
he asked, his brows drawn together in concern. "I don't think we can destroy the Brink," she said, remembering everything Hart had told her. "Even if we could, I don't know if we should." Dakari's expression was stern.
"You don't mean that."
"I don't know anymore. I need to talk with Professor Lachlan. He'll know what to do."
Dakari didn't speak for a long moment.
"You're right, E. You've been through a lot. Maybe you're not thinking straight. Let's just get back and we'll work it all out then."
He wouldn't say anything else, but he kept eyeing her uneasily as she drove the final blocks to Orchard Street. The exterior of the building on Orchard Street didn't look any different than it had when she left weeks ago. But then, why would it? For the people in her own time, she'd been gone only a few minutes. She looked up at the dark brick, seeing it through new eyes. It was an old tenement, and in the moonlight, with the lights out all around and the neighborhood quiet, it could have been 100 years in the past. She could almost imagine walking the 4 blocks to Elizabeth Street and letting herself in through the Strega's back door. For a moment, she imagined that the people she'd met there and come to admire weren't all dead and gone. Dakari opened the front door and let them into the empty foyer. To Esther's relief, the foyer looked like it had before her mistakes at the Schwab mansion. It was, she hoped, a good sign. A sign that maybe she'd managed to fix her mistakes. But it didn't feel like home anymore. There was a clean, almost sterile quality to the place that felt wrong to her now. A building like this one should be teeming with life. There should be the sounds of children in the halls and the smells of 5 different apartments cooking dinner. But there had never been the sound of children in those hallways while she lived in them. The door of 1A opened to reveal the true entrance of the building. Logan was waiting on the other side.
"You're up,"
Estes said, surprised to see him whole and healthy.
"You're feeling okay?"
He frowned.
"Why wouldn't I be?"
"You were shot," she told him, confused. He glanced at Dakari.
"I'm not sure what you're talking about."
Her stomach sank.
"You were shot on the Schwab job. When I left, you weren't even conscious yet."
Her words trailed off.
"You don't remember being shot by the blonde? By Jack?"
"There wasn't any blonde," Logan said, looking at her as though she'd lost her mind.
"There was you trying to save some serving girl and almost getting thrown out, but I don't remember any blonde guy, and I definitely would have remembered being shot."
"Well, I'm glad to see you're okay."
He gave her another doubtful look.
"The professor's upstairs. He's waiting."
Dakari followed her into the elevator and pushed the button for the top floor.
"There really was a blonde," she told him, needing him to believe her. "Logan almost died. I brought him back."
Something changed. Somehow things are different.
"Am I different?"
She glanced up at him.
"No, I don't think so.
You're still here."
He seemed surprised at that.
"Where else would I be?"
"Nowhere," she said. "What about Marie?"
"She's probably in her workshop. What about her?"
She didn't have time to explain about Marie. The elevator was already coming to a stop, and Dakari was pulling back the gate and opening the door for her to step through. I must have done something right. But the victory felt hollow when she thought of all the mistakes she'd made, when she thought of Hart Darrigan standing on the edge of that railing and willing her to go. The professor's library seemed mostly the same, but the piles were neater and there was something different in the way the chairs and tables were organized. At the other end of the room, Professor Lachlan sat, peering through a large magnifying glass at the pages of an open book. He didn't look up, even though he must have heard the elevator arrive, but finished the passage he was reading and made a note in a notebook. When he finally looked up, his eyes narrowed.
"Do you have it?"
She held up the cloak.
"Right here,"
she said.
Good.
He held out his hand.
Give it to me.
Esther hesitated. He seemed different, more distant, more demanding. He's always been demanding, she reminded herself. Still, something felt wrong. For a moment, she thought about trying to remove the book from the inner pocket of the cloak herself so that she didn't have to hand over both. It seemed wrong somehow to give this piece of heart to anyone else, since it was all that was left of him.
Esther?
Professor Lachlan asked, his jaw tense.
Give me the book.
Dakari stepped up behind her.
Come on, E. Give the professor the book, he said softly.
But there was a thread of steel in his voice he'd never used on her before. Confused by their mood, she handed the cloak over without any further argument. It took the professor a moment to find the secret pocket, but rather than bothering with figuring out how to access it, he took out a small knife. There was nothing she could do but watch as he tore open the material and pulled out the book. It was smaller than she'd expected from the weight of the cloak.
That's it?
She asked, looking at the small, dark volume. But she knew it was. On the cover was the symbol she recognized from the painting in Dolph's apartment and the book he'd shown her. She had no doubt that this small, unremarkable tome was the Ars Arcana, the book that so many people wanted, that so many people had died for. Professor Lachlan's eyes were bright, eager. He ignored her disappointment as he ran his fingers over the symbol on the cover.
After all this time.
Esther was telling me she doesn't think we should destroy the brink, Dakari said.
That's not what I said. And I was going to tell him myself.
Esther glanced up at Dakari's flinty expression, and the feeling of unease she'd had since she walked into the building grew.
What exactly were you going to tell me? Professor Lachlan asked.
It's about destroying the brink. I don't think we can. Not even with the book, she said, swaying a little on her feet. She wanted nothing more than to collapse into the ancient sofa and tell him everything, but she had the sense that this was too important to relax.
And what makes you think that?
Heart. I mean, the magician told me when he gave me the book. He said destroying the brink could destroy magic. The professor didn't look pleased.
And you believed him?
I don't know, she said honestly. But I think we should be careful with that, and with the brink. I think we should make sure we understand what we're doing.
It's not your job to think about these things.
I know, it's just... I thought you should know before you do anything. The second hand on a clock ticked, the only sound in the silent library.
He got to you.
No, it's not that, she told him. But she wasn't sure if she spoke the truth.
He turned you.
Professor Lachlan said, his voice flat and filled with disgust.
No, I brought you the book. I did my job.
Another long silence strangled the room.
Of course you did,
he said, but the professor didn't sound pleased.
I'm sure you're simply tired, he told her. Overwrought. After all, I imagine you've been through quite an ordeal. Perhaps you should return to your room and rest.
Maybe, she said. It's been a long day. She gave a weak laugh. It's been a long month.
We can talk more about this tomorrow,
Professor Lachlan told her, but his attention was already on the book in his hands. Esther turned back toward the elevator. She was halfway across the room when something caught her eye. A flash of silver in a shadow box frame she didn't remember seeing there before. For a moment she looked at the art, not understanding what she was seeing, but then, all at once, she understood.
Those were Viola's, she told Professor Lachlan.
Her stomach twisted at the sight of the slim stiletto blades crossed and mounted in the frame. There was no mistaking the deep V's cut into the exposed tangs of each.
How did you get them?
Excuse me?
Professor Lachlan asked. She went over to the wall to look closer at the knives.
How could you possibly have these?
Professor Lachlan glanced at her.
I've had them for ages,
he said.
Or don't you remember?
He gave Dakari a nod.
Perhaps it would be best if you escort her to her room.
I'm fine, Esta started to say, but Dakari was already at her side again.
I'm sorry, he told her, his soft, dark eyes pained. What? She asked, confused by his words. Before she understood what was happening, his arm snaked out to cage her against him, and she felt the sharp bite of something in her biceps.
Dakari!
She looked down at the place where the syringe was sticking into her upper arm, but her words already felt thick, and the edge of her vision was already going black. An old friend. Esta came to, slowly, her head throbbing as she opened her eyes to find herself on the floor in a windowless room. She was still wearing a corset and long skirts, her clothing from the past, so at first she thought it had all been a dream,
that she was still back in her narrow room above the Strega. But she could hear a siren in the distance, a wailing reminder that she was no longer with Dolph and the rest.
She was home, but the ache in her arm where Dakari had jabbed her with the needle and the foggy numbness that filled her head wasn't the welcome she'd expected. Everything felt upside down. She wasn't sure where she was, or if she was even still in Professor Lachlan's building. Her head was spinning as she pulled herself up and felt around the walls of the room, trying to find the door. She made it around the three corners of the small space before she found two seams where a door should have been, but there was no handle and no lock, only a smooth plate of metal over where the locking mechanism should be. No matter how much she searched, she couldn't find any place to pick a lock or jimmy a hinge. It was a prison built for a thief. It was a prison he'd built for her. It could have been minutes or hours that she sat there in the darkness before she finally heard voices coming from the other side of the wall. She scuttled back and tried to focus enough to pull the seconds slow, but time slipped away from her. She couldn't find the spaces. She felt like she had in the basement of the Haymarket, unable to call on her affinity and at the mercy of whoever was coming for her. The wall split open and she blinked, shielding her eyes from the light of the hall.
Come on, E. Dakari, is that you?
She wanted it to be him, but she also didn't know if she could trust him anymore. A moment later, he had hoisted her up onto still shaky legs and was leading her out of the room.
What's going on?
She asked him, and when he didn't answer, she tried to pull away.
Where are we going?
He kept a tight hold on her, though, refusing to answer her questions as he half-led, half-dragged her down the hall toward the elevator.
Why are you acting like this, Dakari? It's me. You know me.
If she only had his knife, maybe she could have gotten through to him, but the knife was lost to the past, and if things didn't improve, she didn't know what her future held in store.
Please?
She tried again. He wouldn't look at her as he pushed her gently into the elevator, and he kept hold of her the entire time the cage made its slow, rattling climb to the top.
Just answer his questions and do what he asks. Prove yourself to him and it'll be fine. Everything can go back to how it should be.
But she doubted anything could ever go back to the way it had been before. Too much had changed. When the elevator stopped at the library, Dakari led her forward.
Come on.
It was night, but she had no idea how long she'd been out of it with the drug they'd given her, and no idea how much time had passed in the windowless prison they'd kept her in. The lights in the library were off, except for the small desk lamp that illuminated the professor's face as he bent, serious and focused, over the Ars Arcana. Near him on the table were the five artifacts laid out in a straight line. When he heard them approaching, he glanced up.
Are you feeling better?
You drugged me and locked me in a doorless room, she said, well aware she was pushing him.
What did I do to deserve that? I brought you the book.
You were also talking nonsense about the Brink being indestructible.
I was only trying to warn you.
Yes, and where did you get the information?
From Hart, she said, knowing how damning that sounded.
Of course you did, because you came to trust him, didn't you? It was exactly what I was afraid of happening. It's exactly why I gave you some incentive to return.
An incentive? Professor Lachlan didn't so much as blink.
You're impulsive, but you're also predictable. I knew that if you believed Dakari's life was in danger, you'd be sure to return, no matter how you might have come to feel about those in the past.
She felt numb from more than the drug they'd given her, now as the image of Dakari's body jerking from the impact of the bullets rose in her mind. He'd been wearing a vest, but those bullets hadn't been blanks. They'd torn through his legs.
You could have killed him.
His life was never in danger, the professor said, dismissing her.
Esta glanced up at Dakari, but her old friend's expression was unreadable, his features closed off and distant. If he was upset or surprised by this news, his face didn't show it.
You risked Dakari's life because you didn't trust me? She pressed.
I wouldn't have trusted anyone that much, but especially not you, impulsive girl that you are. So no, I didn't trust that you wouldn't be swayed by Dolph Saunders or even the magician. I couldn't trust that you wouldn't take one look into Hart Darrigan's pretty gray eyes, listen to his poor little boy lost sob story, and decide to give him a chance. I gave myself some insurance. I gave you an incentive to return.
He stared at her, his nostrils flaring from the exertion of his tirade. With those words, something inside her clicked, and apprehension wrapped around her.
How did you know he had gray eyes?
What?
Professor Lachlan's face bunched in irritation.
Hart Darrigan, you couldn't know what color his eyes were. Pictures wouldn't have shown you that.
His expression went slack, as though he realized the slip, but then a smile curved softly at his lips.
You always have been too observant for your own good.
Unease slinked through her.
You always told me that it made me a good thief.
It did, but it also makes you a problem.
Professor Lachlan spoke to Dakari.
If you'd secure her, I'll take it from here.
She knew it was coming, but she could still hardly believe what was happening when Dakari wrestled her into a chair and secured her arms and legs with rope.
Just tell him the truth, E. If you're still with us, everything's gonna be okay.
Dakari,
she pleaded, but it fell on deaf ears. He was already heading toward the elevator.
You know, you were never supposed to come back here. None of this had to happen if you'd have just done what you should have. If you'd only given me the book that day on the bridge.
Esta turned back to meet Professor Lachlan's gaze.
How could I have given you the book? That was 100 years ago.
Professor Lachlan didn't speak at first, but there was something in his expression that made Esta's skin crawl.
Maybe you're not so very observant after all. You don't recognize me, do you?
He frowned.
Have I really changed so much?
You look exactly the same as the last time I saw you, she said, confused by his question.
A few weeks, a lifetime. Strange how similar two spans of time can be. I was right about you then. I've been right about you all along.
She saw then maybe what she should have seen before.
No,
he'd changed over the years, but beneath the age spots and wrinkles, beneath the tuft of white, thinning hair and the frailness, she thought she could see the boy he'd been.
Nibs,
she said, her voice barely working.
I always hated that name,
he told her.
It can't be. You can't be him. That's impossible.
It's improbable, not impossible. What's a century when you can find healers like Dakari to keep you whole?
Professor Lachlan gave Esta a chastising look.
What's a century when you're waiting for the key to your plans? I'm a patient man, Esta. You must know that much by now.
You killed Dolph, she said. He trusted you and you killed him.
She shook her head.
I don't understand. Dolph wanted to destroy the Brink. He wanted to bring down the Order. You were on the same side. There wasn't any reason to kill him.
Professor Lachlan, Nibs,
sneered. Dolph had some grand plan to destroy the Brink and free the mages in the city. But what would that have done? Started a war with the Sundren? A war we were too weak to win? At least with the book in his hands. They were better hands than yours. He thought we needed the book to gain our freedom. As though the Book of Mysteries, the most ancient and hallowed record of magic, was some simple grimoire he could use to break a wicked spell. Professor Lachlan scoffed. He always was shaky on his Latin tenses. He misunderstood the message Lena sent him before the order took her. I know because she explained it to me when she gave me the note. Not that I bothered to correct him. As long as he wanted to keep pursuing the book, it worked for me. But I knew all along that it wasn't that the book could free us, but that we could free the book. And now I plan to do just that. But the Brink... Professor Lachlan waved off her protest. I never cared about destroying the Brink. It never stopped me from doing the things I wanted to do. It can stay up for all I care. It's a mere nuisance compared to what the Ars Arcana contains, he told her, tapping the book. This isn't just a record of the most important magical developments throughout history. It is an object infused with the very source of magic. Whoever can unlock it controls it, and whoever controls it will have the whole world in their hands. Esther remembered then what Hart had told her on the bridge, that no one had really understood the Ars Arcana's true nature. He'd been wrong. Nibs had known. Nibs had always known, and he'd manipulated them all. And you think you should have that power? She asked, urging him on as she tried to think of some way out of the mess she'd walked right into. Why not me? The Order could barely touch the power these pages contain. They knew what the book was capable of, which is why they kept it under lock and key, but they were never brave enough to actually use it. They'd been warned by the last person brave enough to attempt unlocking the book's secrets and wielding its power after it nearly drove him mad. One of the Order, she asked, realizing that she could just begin to feel the drug they gave her wearing off. She didn't know how long it would take before she could be free of it, but she might be able to wait it out. She needed to keep him distracted, to keep him talking. A little longer and she could try to escape. One of their earliest founders, Professor Lachlan told her. Most don't realize Isaac Newton started his career as an alchemist. Before he sat under any tree, he searched for the Philosopher's Stone, for a way to isolate quintessence. I've had a long time to learn about the Ars Arcana, a long time to learn about Newton's secrets. He got as far as creating the five artifacts by imbuing ancient objects from the five mystical dynasties with the power of mages whose affinities happened to align with the elements. But he stopped before he ever managed to unite them and use them to control the power of the book. Historians believe that he had a nervous breakdown in 1693. But that wasn't what happened at all. It was the book. And his breakdown was the result of attempting to control its power. After he recovered, he gave up alchemy and entrusted the book to the Order for safekeeping. You always told me that elemental magic wasn't real magic, she argued, still reeling. Or was that a lie, too? It's not. Elemental magic isn't real magic. It requires breaking up the pieces of creation, dividing them and weakening them in order to control them. Real magic is about controlling the whole of creation, the spaces between the elements that make up the very fabric of existence. Mages don't need the elements, but we can use them. We've always been able to use them. With the right rituals, the elements can be quite useful to augment natural power. It's what made the Order what it is. It's what made you what you are. He told her, lifting the cuff and examining it in the light of the desk lamp. The Order doesn't have real magic, she argued. She was feeling stronger now, but she had to keep him talking until she figured out how to escape. So she pressed on, taunting him with her disbelief. They aren't mages. All the power they have is stolen. He placed the cuff back onto the table before he looked at her. That may be true now, but it wasn't always. The Order of the Ortus Aurea began as a front. Like so many of those so-called occult societies,
It was formed so the richest, most influential mages could hide in plain sight. The Order is one of the oldest, though, and they were able to maintain their power even as the disenchantment destroyed magic. That news contradicted everything she'd ever been taught, everything she'd ever believed. You're telling me that the members of the Order were once mages? Of course they were. There's always been magic in the world, and at one time most people could put their finger on it, until they allowed themselves to forget. The disenchantment helped with that. When the climate on the continent grew too dangerous, the mages who could leave did. They brought their little society to the New World because they thought they could start fresh and they believed the new land was one where magic could take root. It didn't work, of course. Away from their homelands, after a few generations, their power had faded. So they used the secrets in these pages to create the Brink as a way to protect their magic. But they couldn't control it. What began as a way to build their power became a trap, and their magic continued to fade. A few generations more, and the only magic they had left was the power they could steal through their experiments. The Brink was never intended as a weapon, but it became one well enough. By the time my family arrived in Manhattan back in 1888, the Order had forgotten what they once were, what they'd come from. They feared the power that was coming to their shores, so they tried to eliminate it. They targeted the weak, the poor, those who had no voice, no power to fight back. They killed my father because he tried to speak out, and then they hunted down my mother and brothers and sisters. I only got away because I was off working, an 11-year-old working at a factory just to put bread on the table. They had no idea what fear was, but they will. Newton knew that if anyone could finish what he started and control the book's power, they'd be as powerful as a god, the last magician the world would ever know. Now that I have the book and the stones, I can unlock the power of the Ars Arcana. I've been waiting a lifetime. More, really, for this moment.
So do it already, she challenged. You're standing here monologuing like some cartoon villain. If you have all the pieces, what are you waiting for?
He smiled, a slow, creeping curve of his narrow lips. I've been waiting for you, Esther.
I won't help you.
Oh, I think you will.
When he lifted himself from the chair and worked his way around the table to where she sat, she realized then that he didn't have his usual crutch. Instead, his hand rested on a cane topped with a silver Medusa head.
That was Dolph's, she said, through clenched teeth as anger flashed through her. Yes, it was. You might say he bequeathed it to me.
More like you stole it.
Mere semantics. All that matters now is that I've nearly won. Dolph Saunders didn't get the book. Because of your work, Hart Darrigan didn't either.
Disgust rose in her throat. I would never help you.
Professor Lachlan tipped his head to the side, his expression calm. What makes you think you'll have any choice?
The impossible choice.
Esther pulled against the ropes, desperate to loosen them enough to free herself. She wanted nothing more than to destroy the man in front of her, but the ropes holding her were too tight. They barely moved. Professor Lachlan straightened. You're only going to wear yourself out, and I'm nowhere near done with you.
Funny, I'm more than finished with you, she spat.
He laughed as he made his way to the table that held the artifacts, scooping them up and bringing them to where she was still tied to the chair. You certainly inherited your mother's fire, didn't you?
Her voice sounded like gravel when she finally found it.
You knew my mother?
Professor Lachlan took a moment to look her over, his cloudy eyes studying her.
Dressed like that, you look a bit like her, you know. Not much, but a little. Same eyes, lighter hair.
He placed the crown that held the dragon's eye on her head, so the cool metal lay snug against her forehead.
You're certainly impulsive, like she was. Stubborn, too.
You told me you found me in a park.
Her own voice sounded very far away, and all around her the room felt like a tunnel. I lied, he said.
fastening the collar that held the Ginny star around her neck. Or maybe you're lying now.
Am I?
He slid the ring with the clear agate called Delphi's tear onto her left middle finger. She could feel the warmth of the stones, but they didn't call to her, not like Ishtar's key did. Professor Lachlan was still holding the cuff, and if he would just put it on her arm, if she could just fight past the drug in her system, maybe she could get away. You have to be lying. Because if he wasn't, then everything that Esta had ever believed about herself was also a lie.
I'm surprised you didn't put it all together for yourself. You might be impulsive, maybe a bit over-emotional, but I've never thought of you as stupid.
He huffed out an amused laugh.
You didn't, though, did you?
He studied her for a moment before he continued.
Actually, now that I look at you, you definitely have more of your father in you. I wonder why someone didn't notice the resemblance. Not that they would ever have put that together. Not when everyone thought Dolph and Lena's child died at birth.
Dolph? She whispered.
And Lena. Who wasn't quite his wife.
Professor Lachlan gave her a less than friendly pat on the cheek, but she didn't even feel the sting of his hand against her skin.
No. Dolph Saunders couldn't be her father.
She'd sat across from him countless times, had talked with him and argued with him. She would have known. When he bought her the Knish from Schimmel's and told her what he wanted to do, wouldn't she have realized? When they brought his body in, pale and lifeless, and she had mourned with the others, wouldn't she have felt something? Anything that would have made her recognize who he was to her?
That's not possible, she said through the tightness in her throat. Dolph Saunders died more than 100 years ago.
Professor Lachlan gave her a pitying look.
You are capable of traveling through time, aren't you?
He held up Ishtar's key.
With the right equipment, that is.
I would have remembered.
You were far too young to remember anything. You couldn't have been more than 3 when everything went wrong. After Darrigan took the book and destroyed half of Khafra Hall, Tammany's patrols and the Order's influence made life a living hell in the Bowery. You know that now for yourself.
No, she whispered, as though uttering that single syllable could change the truth that was staring her in the face. I was there. He didn't have a child.
He didn't know he had a child. Lena kept it from him after he betrayed her. He was so desperate back then to shore up his power that he didn't tell her he was dabbling in ritual magic. She didn't find out until it was too late that he'd taken some of her power and used it to turn his marks into weapons. The shock of it sent her into labor too early. And when you were born, she told everyone you'd died.
How could she?
In those days, it was fairly easy. Fathers weren't all that involved. I think the real question you mean to ask is why.
He shrugged.
Because it was clear from the beginning that you were something special, something rare and powerful, and she didn't trust that Dolph wouldn't use you as well.
He never knew? She asked, horrified that anyone could do such a thing.
He never even saw you. She was desperate to protect you, and you should know well enough that desperate people are capable of terrible things. But they also make easy marks.
She trusted you, Esta realized. It was the only way he could know.
Professor Lachlan nodded. She needed an ally, and she believed in me. I don't think she ever intended to hide you for long, but lies have a tendency to take on lives of their own. We both knew your affinity was something different. Maybe once there had been others who could do what you can do, but they were hunted and eliminated during the disenchantment. You were rare, even in 1902, an unexpected anomaly, born from unexpected parents. It was easy enough to get her out of the way. Dolph believed me when I told him Lena would be fine going into Morgan's house. He was supposed to die that night as well, the stubborn bastard, but in the end it was easy enough to get rid of him, too.
You killed them both. She whispered, still trying to process what he revealed. She was suddenly glad there was a chair holding her up, because she wouldn't have trusted her legs to do the job.
You lied to me about everything. I also saved you. Life is full of contradictions, isn't it? All the amusement melted from his expression, and he leaned even closer. By the end of the year, things had only gotten worse. Their conclave was coming up, and the Order was growing increasingly desperate to find their artifacts. I knew if the raids got a hold of you, the Order would keep you. I couldn't risk losing you, so I did the only thing I could. I used Ishtar's key to hide you. He held up the cuff and examined the stone. This stone didn't have the crack bisecting its smooth surface. Even from that distance, Esta could feel its call. I'd experimented with it myself, and I knew it could be used to focus or amplify magical power, even if I wasn't completely sure what it would do for you. You were too small to have any control over your power, but I knew that if I got you scared enough, you'd use your affinity. So I locked you in a closet. And when you stopped crying, I opened the door to find you gone, exactly as I'd hoped, far out of the reach of the Order. They took me in, of course, and the interrogation wasn't an easy one. I didn't exactly walk away from it, he said, gesturing to his leg. When I got back, the old woman I'd left watching the room said you'd never returned. I'd expected you to be back in minutes, maybe hours after the Order's men left. He frowned. Ishtar's key was more powerful than I'd realized, and you made me wait quite a while longer before you finally showed up. More than 90 years. But I was right in the end. It all worked out. I waited, and while I waited, I planned, and sure enough, you eventually appeared. As I knew you would. You stole me. You stole my entire life. I made you. I gave you a life you would never have had back then, and now you're going to repay the favor. He slipped the cuff onto her arm. She could sense its heat, the call of its magic, but her blood still wasn't quite clear of whatever drug he'd given her, so she couldn't draw on it. Do you know what time is, Esta? Professor Lachlan smiled when she didn't answer. It's the substance that connects everything. The indefinable quality that transcends everything. It's the quintessence of existence. Ether. There was a reason I wanted you. A reason I saved you. Ether? Esta asked, remembering Hart's words on the bridge. He took the dagger, the one she'd stolen from Schwab's mansion that fateful night when everything had started to go wrong, and examined its tip. It's a bit primitive, I know, but these things do tend to work better with a little blood. Esta held herself steady, refusing to so much as flinch when the professor approached her with the knife. Slowly he traced it across her chest, just beneath her collarbone. She didn't even feel the bite of the blade. Her entire world had imploded. She'd betrayed her friends in the past, and now she'd been betrayed by the only family she'd ever known. Everything she thought she knew about who she was or why she'd been saved was a lie. With everyone turned against her, she had no way out. What was a little blood? A little pain in the face of all that? When he was done, when her wound had started to feel hot, he tucked the knife into the bodice of her dress so its blade was pointing down toward her belly, and the pharaoh's heart lay flush against her skin. Ether connects all of the elements, he explained. And so I will use your affinity to connect the stones. With them united, I'll be able to control the power of the book. And what about me? She said, hating the way her voice shook. What happens to me? I expect the same thing that happened to all the mages whose power was taken to create the original stones. He gave her an unreadable look. You're just the vessel. She tried to struggle against the ropes again, but with the dagger against her skin, she couldn't move without slicing herself to ribbons. Now, it'll only take a few more minutes. Professor Lachlan smiled softly then, and it wasn't the cold smile of Nibsy Lorcan, but instead was the smile Esta had grown up with, the smile she had craved so desperately as a child. That betrayal sliced deeper than any wound the dagger could make. But she lifted her chin. She would not let him know how afraid she was. The only thing she would allow him was her hate. Professor Lachlan returned to the table and retrieved the book. He ignored her as he flipped to a page he'd carefully marked, and then he began to read aloud. At first it sounded like Latin, But as he droned on, the tenor of his voice changed as though something had come over him, and she could no longer understand the individual words. As he chanted, the syllables grew more and more strange, until they no longer sounded like words, until his voice no longer sounded human, and as he chanted, the stones and the pieces of metal pressed against her skin began to grow warm. On and on he went, until time seemed to lose all meaning, until the heat from the stones felt as though it would burn straight through to her bones, until a strange wind had begun to swirl around the library, rustling the papers until it grew strong enough to send them into the air, until the lights began to flicker, until all at once a terrible roaring filled her ears. And then everything went dark. The air in the room went still, but Esta wasn't gone. Contingencies. A flame flickered nearby, illuminating the deep wrinkles of Professor Lachlan's face as he approached her. "You're still alive," he said softly, like he was talking to himself more than her. "It didn't work." "I can't say I'm all that sorry." Professor Lachlan leaned close to her. "You will be." He used the intercom to tell Logan to check the breakers in the basement, and he began removing the artifacts from her one by one, beginning with her cuff. A moment later, the lights flickered on again. "Did you say one of the words wrong?" she asked, purposely poking at him. "No, I said everything perfectly," he told her as he took the final artifact back. "I was afraid this might happen. I was afraid it had been too long."
"So your grand plan isn't going to work after all?"
She didn't allow herself to hope, not so long as she was still tied to the chair.
"Of course it will. There might not be enough magic left in this world for the ritual to work now, but there was before. So you'll take the book back to the boy I once was, back to a world where magic still had power, and I was still young enough to use it."
"Why would I ever do that?" He studied her for a moment.
"Because if you don't, you'll most likely disappear. If Ishtar's key isn't in the past, I won't be able to give it to you as a child."
Her mind was racing.
"Then I should have already disappeared," she challenged. "Me bringing Ishtar's key back here to this time would have already changed my life. The date you gave me the stone would have already passed by now. Nibs, you wouldn't have been able to give me the stone as a young girl. I wouldn't have grown up in this time, and we wouldn't be having this conversation."
"Unless you've already done it. I don't think this moment would change until you make the conscious decision to change the past."
He smiled, clearly pleased with himself.
"I've seen every connection, planned for every contingency. It's a particular talent of mine."
So that was Nibsy's secret. No wonder he kept it such a secret. Esta lifted her chin.
"Maybe I'd rather disappear than let you in," she said. "Did you plan for that?"
"Actually, I did," he said.
He walked to his desk and pressed a button. A moment later, the elevator rattled to life, the lift climbing toward them. He pulled a gun from the drawer in his desk and aimed it directly at her. The barrel was tipped with a silencer.
"I won't help you unlock the power in that book," she said, pleased to hear that her voice didn't shake even if she did. "I'd rather die."
Professor Lachlan smiled.
"I'm sure you would. But who would you be willing to sacrifice with you?"
The door to the elevator opened then.
"You called, Professor?"
Dakari said, stepping into the room.
"No!"
she screamed, fighting against the ropes that held her.
"Dakari, go!"
But it was too late. The gun went off. A soft clap followed by the louder sound of Dakari hitting the floor.
"No!"
she cried, and her eyes were already burning with tears. She was still fighting against the ropes and against the truth of what had just happened. Professor Lachlan walked to where she was sitting and jerked her chin up, forcing her to look at him.
"It seems you have a choice after all. You can choose to fade away, choose to disappear and never exist. Maybe it'll happen immediately. Maybe you'll have time to watch everyone you've ever cared for die just as Dakari has. Logan, Marie, her entire family you're so fond of. I'll bring them here for you. Make sure you can see them plead for their lives before I kill them, so they can know it was you who signed their death warrant. Or you can do what I ask and take the book back to my younger self. No, she whispered, shaking her head. You like to save people, don't you? Think of it. You could rewrite this future and give Dakari a new life in a world without the Order. A life that wouldn't end in a heap on my library floor. If you're very good, you might even convince my younger self to have mercy on Dolph's crew.
She couldn't stop the tears that ran down her face. She turned away from Professor Lachlan, unable to stomach him so close to her, and across the room, Viola's knives glinted in the dim light. John Yu. Viola. Maybe she couldn't save Dolph, but she could still save them. As long as she didn't give up, she could go back and try once more to change things. Fine, she said, keeping her eyes on Viola's knives so Professor Lachlan wouldn't see the hate in her gaze. I'll do it, but I will fight you every step of the way. Professor Lachlan, Nibs, whoever he was, smiled. I wouldn't expect anything less, girl. But know this, you're playing against a stacked deck. I've already considered everything you might do, and I've already accounted for all the outcomes. Fight all you want, but the future will be mine. Professor Lachlan hadn't lied about being prepared. He'd accounted for what seemed like every contingency. Logan had her by the arm to ensure she didn't use her affinity without taking him with her. The gun was just a precaution, they'd told her, in case she got any ideas. Not that she believed them. Once they were in the past, it would be easy enough for Logan to kill her. They'd given her some sort of drug, timing it so that as they walked the 6 blocks to the park, it would wear off just enough to allow her to use Ishtar's key to take Logan back to 1902. She wouldn't have a chance to get away before then, not without dealing with the gun. She'd been given an exact date, 1 week after the day on the bridge. Once they were back, Logan had specific instructions about what to look for. If she tried to take him to any other time, he'd kill her. Or he'd injure her badly enough to make her want to cooperate. Once they were back, the Strega would be an easy walk. There would be very little chance of her getting away, or for her to ruin Professor Lachlan's plans for them to deliver the book and the stones. And once Nibs had them, there would be no stopping him. To make things worse, she didn't really know Logan. Not this version of Logan. She didn't have the same memories he did of their shared history, and all she could go on to predict how he would act was the hope that the intrinsic nature of a person was steady and stable, no matter what trajectory their life took. He might have been a pain in the ass before, but he hadn't been evil. He wouldn't have purposely hurt someone. She could only hope that was still the case. But she wasn't sure she believed it. She kept her head down. Her posture slouched like the weight of the world. Its past, present, and future was on her shoulders. Let them believe they've won, she thought to herself. Let them think she was penned in, even if she wasn't yet sure how she'd ever manage to get out. The professor looked at his watch, and when the time came that the medication would have been out of her system, he gave a stiff nod. Logan jammed the gun harder into her back, a cue that she needed to start. But she still felt sluggish and numb from the lingering effects of the drug, so it was harder than usual to find the right moment, the exact time she was supposed to hit. She pushed down through the layers of years until she felt the familiar pull of that time. Strange, she thought, for it to feel almost as if she were going home. But Esther forced herself to ignore the sappy sentiment. It took everything she had to guide them to the moment she wanted. In the distance, the Freedom Tower, the city's one-fingered salute to the rest of the world, began to fade. The city dimmed around them, and she felt that push-pull sensation, like she would fly apart and collapse in on herself all at once as she pulled them to the date she needed. The park receded, and the city of yesterday began to materialize,
and just as she was almost through, just before the present disappeared and the past was made real, Logan began to scream and tear at the bag he had strapped to his chest, the bag that contained the other artifacts and the book. Instinctively, she understood that this was the best chance she would have. She gave her arm a vicious twist, wrenching herself away from him, and Logan, who was still focused on the bag, let her go just as they landed hard on the damp, cobbled streets of old New York. Her entire body was shaking with the effort it had taken to get away from him, and the cuff on her arm was warm. The neighborhood was eerily quiet for the middle of the day. In the distance, she heard the clanging of bells and smelled the heavy chemical smell of buildings burning. Slipping through time always left Logan momentarily dizzied, and it did this time as well. He'd barely managed to pull the bag off and toss it away from himself when a group of darkly dressed boys came around the corner. Five-pointers. Their eyes lit when they saw the two of them lying on the sidewalk, Logan still dazed from the trip, and their pace increased. But before the boys could reach her, Esta pulled time slow and scooped the bag up. She brushed the grime of the streets from her dress, and with the world silent and still around her, she started to walk. She had somewhere she needed to be, a life she needed to save. She had to go back. She had to get to the bridge. Logan could fend for himself. The Magician. March 1902. The Brooklyn Bridge. The magician stood at the edge of his world and took one last look at his city. Around him, chaos erupted on the bridge, but his eyes were on the only thing that mattered. Esta.
Go, he willed her.
She had to take the book where they would all be safe from it. She had to take herself there, too, far away from Nibs or Jack or anyone else who might use her, including him. If the Order ever found out what she was, what she could do,
go.
But she wore the same stubborn expression he recognized from every other time he'd tried to get her to do something. She wasn't leaving. She wasn't getting away while she could. He'd expected her stubbornness, though. Had known he would have to take the decision from her. It was only one step. A single step, and it would all be over. He closed his eyes and let himself feel the wind on his face one last time as he leaned into it. And then he was falling, and the air around him pushed and pulled at him, pressing in on his body until he was so dizzy he thought he would vomit, his head pounding with an unnatural pressure. He fell and fell until he hit the ground in front of him with something, someone, pinning him down. He heard a soft, feminine moan and the weight rolled off him.
John, you?
Esta's voice came to him like a dream.
What are you doing here?
It took him a second to find his voice, to make himself understand what he was seeing, but it was Esta. It was really Esta, not some dream of her. The bridge was empty and silent, and she was sprawled across John Yu's back, looking more confused than he'd ever seen her. And he wasn't dead.
He was helping me, Hart said, pulling himself up.
He was still reeling from the shock of seeing her, the absolute wonder at being alive, when moments ago he'd thought John Yu had decided to let him fall.
Helping you?
She pulled herself off John Yu, who lay unconscious on the ground.
Helping you do what?
Fake my own death.
He swallowed uncomfortably when her expression seemed more angry than relieved. Esta just stared at him with her eyes wide and a look of utter consternation on her face. It was maybe the first time he'd ever seen her at a loss for words.
You're shaking,
Hart said, touching her cheek with a trembling hand. Her skin was pale, her hair a mess around her face.
I'm fine, she told him, but she didn't push him away.
Then all at once her face crumpled.
You idiot, she said, slapping Hart. You told me you were going to jump.
Her voice was nearly manic and her eyes were wild with unshed tears.
I thought you were dead,
she cried, her voice cracking as her chin trembled.
I'm not dead.
he said softly, glad to hear his voice was so steady, considering how shaken he felt. He hadn't known for sure that John Yu was going to be there as they'd planned. When he'd leaned into the wind, Hart was forcing himself to put all his trust, his entire life, into someone else's hands. She slapped him again, and he raised his arms to fend off the attack, but fell over instead, his head spinning from the motion.
Esther, stop! You lied to me again! I had to,
he said, pulling himself upright again. He caught her hands gently so that she couldn't hit him again.
I needed you to get the book away from Nibs and Jack, and I knew you wouldn't leave any other way.
But her expression didn't soften. Her golden eyes were still filled with fire.
You told me the Order would never stop hunting you. They won't.
John Yu moaned nearby but hadn't yet come to.
Then why?
She seemed to have calmed down, so he released her hands.
I was going back to the city to stop Nibs and the Order, to create a different future for you to return to.
Esther went still, her expression wary.
And I'm just supposed to believe you now? He speaks truly,
John Yu added with a groan as he finally pulled himself upright.
We arranged everything after Dolph was found.
He took a look around and seemed to realize finally that the bridge was empty.
What happened? Where did everyone go?
He asked, puzzled.
They left hours ago, Esther explained. Hours?
For you it would have felt like moments, Esther told him. I thought I was just grabbing Hart. I didn't realize you were there too when I reached through.
John Yu looked utterly perplexed.
Reached through?
Through time, she said. I couldn't come all the way through, so I just kind of pushed you past the moment you were in to a different time.
She rubbed at her arm and pain flickered across her expression.
It's a long story.
John Yu peered at Esther with confusion and no little amount of curiosity.
I would be most interested to hear your explanation. Later.
Hart turned to Esther.
We had to make the Order and Nibs, everyone, believe that I was gone, he said, trying to explain. Hell, you were supposed to believe it too. You were supposed to stay in your own time when you'd be safe.
There's no such thing as safe anymore, she said softly. Then she looked to John Yu.
Does Viola know too? Was she in on this?
I thought the fewer who knew, the better. Easier to avoid suspicion around Nibs, John Yu told her.
Nibs,
Esther said, her voice breaking. Then she told them about Nibs and Professor Lachlan, about Dakari's death and Logan's betrayal.
How did you ever get away? Hart asked.
I improvised. A small smile tugged at her lips.
And now I have this.
She pulled the book from the bag that she had slung across her body, but her eyes were still staring into its interior, and the color was draining from her face.
No. What?
He asked, wondering what could have put that look on her face after everything they'd been through. She pulled out a charred piece of metal that looked strangely familiar.
Is that...
They're gone, she whispered, dumping the contents of the bag onto the ground. The artifacts he'd stolen, all charred so badly they were nearly beyond recognition.
This happened before, when I came here the first time to find you. I showed you, remember?
Your cuff, Hart said, remembering the strange images that had flashed through his mind when she'd kissed him on stage.
What happened to them?
I don't know, she said. But I wonder... I felt the same heat and pain when I reached to push you through as I'd felt the first time I came back. There must be something to the stones. They must not be able to exist in the same time as themselves.
Hart thought for a moment. Nibs wouldn't have sent the stones back with this Logan character if he knew this would happen. He won't be able to get them either. Not where I've put them. We're safe. It's over.
It's not. She looked up at him, her expression unreadable. Someday he will get them. He has before. We have to get the stones before he does.
They seem to be beyond repair, John Yu said,
gesturing to the charred remains.
"Not these," Esta said. "The others."
She met Hart's eyes.
"The stones that should still be in this time,"